very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Tonight we begin a two-part retrospective on a very special hacking conference that took place this past August called Hacking at Random, or HAR. You're going to hear a bunch of us wandering around the campgrounds in the Netherlands, as well as some excerpts from HAR FM, a radio station that was started and run for the specific purpose of reaching the attendees of the HAR conference. And now, HAR 2009.
You're listening to HAR FM News. Some news from the Ubuntu front. The boys and girls at Canonical and their vast community are working hard to complete their youngest release, 9.10, aka Karmic Koala, which is due in October. Alpha version 4 has been released yesterday and it's available for testing. Neil Hunt, Chief Product Officer at Netflix, has announced on the Netflix Prize Forums that they are planning to hold a new data mining competition. Program at HAR today. We have the hard disk shredder here at the HAR FM tent. It will be here until 6 o'clock this afternoon. Come by and have a look at the hard disks being destroyed, or take home the shreds of your own hard disk. Lectures coming up at HAR, starting right now. Omonti Hall, slide channel analysis and fault injection. On the two envelopes tent, government and trust. On the birthday tent, native IPv6 deployment at Access for All. Announcements. Unfortunately, two lectures have been cancelled due to sicknesses. One is a talk about the iPhone today at 7 p.m. The other talk is the one about e-voting in Germany tomorrow, also at 7 p.m. There will be an ad hoc meet and greet session for civil rights activists at 7 p.m. today in the Bike Shed Red. This is not a formal presentation, but a way for civil rights activists to meet and discuss current events in European policy making. Two more announcements from the organization. All visitors of HAR have to park their car on the parking lot and not on the road on the HAR area. HAR is in need for volunteers for everything and also for doing a security shift during the night between 2 a.m. and 8 a.m. We are in need for our volunteers, so if you want to help, please go to Camp J. J as in Java. The weather. Clouds are going away. It will stay warm and sunny this afternoon. Temperature about 23 degrees. The current terror alert from the Netherlands is substantial. So far, the HAR FM news.
Hey, and this hour we are having full disclosure. It's me, Sven, and with me in the studio will be some guests from the quadcopter squad, flying objects, and Harald Welte from the GSM project that's running at this camp right now. But first we are listening to some music. It's Diesel Weasel from Benvar.
So here we are at HAR, standing under the disco lights. Well, it's a disco light inside a forest, and it's on a hill, which makes it incredibly disorienting when you climb the hill, because it feels like the ground is moving when it's not. But that's such a small part of what this event has been. Voltaire, you've been here for the first time, first ever outdoor hacker event for you in Europe. What kinds of impressions, without getting too emotional, do you think you can come away with?
And I'll try to hold back the tears, but it's quite awesome seeing everybody just hanging out in tents or in, like, their communal tents and everything, and just a sense of, like, everybody getting together and sharing ideas and such. It's when I get back home, I'm going to have, like, so much more ideas and projects that I'm going to want to work on. It's like every time you go to a 2600 meeting or whatnot, you always get new ideas and go back home motivated. And this is going to be like that times 10.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about, you know, conference issues and what happens at various talks, but basically this goes so far beyond that because it's also just this city that's sort of been built here of a massive amount of tents. And
that's how I describe it, a city. Like, each country has their own quote-unquote embassy, and then there are different, like, embassies with different themes, like pirate party embassy, the geek chick embassy, the Ubuntu embassy, CentOS embassy.
They're called embassies? I know the Italians call theirs the embassy.
Okay, it's a lot of them call themselves villages, but it's the same thing, basically.
Yeah, well, we were at the Italian embassy last night, and that got pretty wild.
Yes, let's go again.
Okay, well, yeah, we're all in good time. There's all kinds of parties going on. This is actually the last night. This is Saturday night. This thing started on Thursday and pretty much wraps up on Sunday, although there will be more people staying here after Sunday. And I guess it's kind of hard to leave. It's, you know, it's so many good memories coming out of this place. And, well, this has done wonders for your schedule, hasn't it, going to sleep at all hours?
Yes, last night, I think. I mean, I've gotten, like, 10 hours of sleep each night, but I don't know.
10 hours?
Well, last night, I think I got, like...
Some people don't get 10 hours total in the whole conference.
Yes, well, I don't drink blue mate, so I think that helps.
Yes, that's true. Basically, there's so much to do. I mean, 24 hours a day, you just sort of wander around, and there's bright lights in the fields and in the forest. And you just sort of come upon this group of people you don't know, and you just start talking and philosophizing and sharing various things. And you make friends for life, this kind of thing. And this is what we try and tell people every time we talk about these kinds of events, because they really are life-changing events. And, yeah, I know it's a hassle to get off from work. It costs money to get places. But that's why you plan in advance, so that you can make sure this happens one way or another. Now, I imagine, Voltaire, you had to sacrifice quite a bit to be able to take time out of a summer to make it over here. Is there something you could say maybe to other people who might find themselves in a similar situation next year or the year after that? And what can they do to actually make it happen?
Start saving. Put all the change you get at the end of the day in a jar. That's what I literally did. Also, I sold candy. I know it sounds corny, but...
You sold candy?
Yes, against school policy. I'd go to Costco or BJ's and get, like, big boxes of candy and sell them for $1 at school.
This is interesting. So, wait, what you did was, and you broke the rules by doing this, you actually went to a prize club-type place and bought massive amounts of candy, which is not very good for your teeth, and then you went to school and you sold this at a substantial profit and made money so you could travel to Europe.
Exactly. And I faced a lot of danger doing so. I got, last year I got, I almost got suspended, but I ended up getting like 2 hours of detention a day for a week. But it was worth it.
And you continued to sell the candy?
Yes, indeed. There's a great picture of me.
That's a side of you I didn't know about. Wow, you're really bucking the system there.
Yes, that's why I always pay for dinner with $1 bills. And
well, we thought that was because of something else, but wow, yeah. Okay, that's
that was my old job.
In the studio we've got Frederick. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, we'd love to hear your noise.
Okay.
What did you make?
Well, it's just a beer can with a coil of wire on a bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And for the resonator, since the can is made of aluminium, I have to use a piece of steel, so I use the cap of a glass bottle.
Cap of
beer.
Glass bottle? And I see a battery?
Yeah, there is a small regular battery, just enough to make it sound.
Well, let's hear the sound.
Okay.
And that's the sound the buzzer makes. Well, Frederick, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for showing us how it works. Jupiler, the can you use, must be really proud. they've been hacked.
They've
been hacked.
It's only the beginning.
Can you explain a little bit about the parts you used for this?
Well, it's just an M10 bolt with two nuts, some enameled wire, rivets, and wire and the cap, and that's about it.
What's making the noise? Because something
well,
is clicking against the...
Because actually there is I built a crude switch.
Mm-hmm.
When the cap is attracted by the bolt, it just cut its own power. So
oh.
It just release and it's repeating.
Wow, that's really cool. Well, congratulations, you won, and someday you're going to get your prizes.
Okay.
We want to invite you for our show on Sunday,
okay.
Starting at 11, and then we're going to decide who's going to be Super Hacker.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Frederick.
Thank you.
Okay, time to listen to some more music before I finish my conversation with Luke. Face with No Name is going to be the next song.
Hi, Off the Wall, this is Mitch.
Mitch Altman.
Mitch Altman.
Wow, how about that?
Greetings, Off the Wall listeners. This is Bicycle Mark here at camp. I just call it camp as if it's, you know, my summer camp.
Summer camp. Wouldn't it be cool if summer camp was like this?
Yeah, I never had that when I was a kid. I never went to summer camp. My parents didn't allow it.
I never went to summer camp, but I know it was nothing like this.
Yeah, it meant much.
I went to summer camp, and it really did not do well for my development.
Yeah, same here.
It couldn't have done well for the camp either, I imagine.
I just got into the canoes. They had canoes, and I would go to an island where I could hide from the rest of the kids and eat blueberries. They had great blueberries on that island.
Didn't they need the canoe back for something else?
I had to be back by dinner.
Wow.
Did I sound funny on the GSM network just now? Because it didn't sound good at all. I couldn't...
Well, I'm sorry about that, but no, everyone who calls me on this GSM network doesn't sound good. And it's hard explaining where you want to meet somebody because they can't hear you.
Yeah.
They hear you at first, and then after like 5 seconds, they can't.
But the disco ball is quite the obvious place to meet.
Yeah, we're standing under a disco ball in the middle of the forest, and this disorients me so much looking at the ground, seeing
I know,
the little
kind of
lights
seasick.
Moving back and forth. Especially when you're standing on the hill and walking up and down the hill.
And there's a silent disco going on nearby.
Silent disco? What's that all about?
It's kind of trendy. I hear it advertised in Amsterdam here and there. I've never attended one, so I feel a little out of it. I figure you put on your headphones and you dance around, no?
Yeah. Everyone has their own headphones and everyone dances to their own music.
Oh. I think it would be cooler if they somehow pumped out music in that particular area.
That's how I understood it. With people, like, they'll put a small FM transmitter and they'll all listen to the same thing.
What's silent about that? You're just hearing it in your ears, but no one else is.
I don't think this is an ideal place to have it, because mostly all hackers here, but the idea is to have, like, do it in the middle of a busy area, and if people are like, why are these people dancing? I don't hear any music. So.
Sounds like a smart mod type of thing.
Yeah.
And that does make it possible to have a disco or nightclub next door to the family village.
I see. Of course, there's so much space here that you could pretty much... I went to Area Z today for the first... Have you guys been to Area Z?
Are you allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Area Z, they call it here. I was looking for somebody, and I actually found them down there, but it takes a long time to walk there, and it's very far outside where most things are.
Is there extra security to get into Area Z? I mean,
no, in fact, you don't have to pay to get to Area Z, because it's outside where the admission... Did I hear the Star Trek theme?
Yeah.
Star Trek. All you have to do is wander around here, and something will put a smile on your face at least every 50 feet.
And you're back at Hackers at Lunch. Luke and I are here in the studio. Chloe is out in the field. And we're looking at some amazing things. Just a few minutes ago, two guys tried to hack the event phones. And Chloe and I were actually at event phones, Luke.
But how did they... how was the how was the response? Did they like it? Were they curious,
yeah.
or were they a little bit grumpy?
Well, I was actually the event phones. They weren't open yet. It's way too early for them, I guess.
Okay.
But the deck phones were there, and they had some. They really loved the idea, but they said, "Well, we don't know if it's going to work because we only have 200, 250 lines available. Probably something around that. So if you want to hack 1,000." Phones at a time, that's kind of a bit of a challenge.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been the computer which failed, or the network which didn't allow you to, at this point of view. At this point. But they have some other interesting news, because there are about 1,000 decked phones active right now.
Nice, nice.
Nice. And, well, you can call for free to home numbers. And so far, 12 euros with 1,000 phones have been made into phone calls.
Hmm.
In Holland, Belgium, and Germany, I guess.
It's per phone.
No, it's 1,000 phones, 12 euro, day zero, and day one.
In total?
In total. So far, till this point, 12 euros. Mm. So I guess that was really good news.
But what's your conclusion about it?
Well, then it's really good marketing. If you talk about creative entrepreneurs, the guys from Dexphone, they're really at the right spot right now. They thought about how to build a community. They let you experience how it works. And I think it's really good in a lot of businesses, Dexphones. It might work really good. So I think it's really a good place for them to be. Because if you actually go to... well, there are a lot of people over here who are working in businesses looking for some perfectly fine solutions. And right now they see that the Dexphones are being used, how they work, and what benefits are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I once worked with a company which has a Dexphone coverage during their complete building. So and they gave everyone a Dexphone.
Yeah.
And everyone was could be reached by phone the whole day they were in the building, and that was quite convenient for everyone there.
I believe so. And, well, those are just a few facts which I really like. But, Andreas, you are on Twitter, and I've heard that
I'm looking at the Twitter poll for R2009, and there's Leyvanville is desperately looking for a 5-volt, 1.2 amps power supply to power their VoIP phone booth, so they need help with a power supply. We've also got, that people complaining that the sleeping bags rated at 5 degrees means that they'll survive. So they were really cold last night.
I agree.
There's a VGA workshop being set up at a BSD tent. And let's see. Oh, yeah. I saw how much traffic we're all consuming. And it's at last count, it was 954 megabits out and 143 megabits in. So we're producing more data than we're consuming. So that's the good way around.
Interesting. Yeah. That's, I would expect it the other way around. But
And I also see people twittering that they had their their hard disks shredded here at the RFM. So if you need your hard disk shredded or want to know how it works, get here and take a look at the magic machine, because it's quite impressive to see how much power it needs to shred your hard disk.
What's shredding your hard disk for me as a...
Physically destroying it and reliably destroying it so nobody can ever, ever, ever see your data on it.
Okay, so that's what they should do at the cops, at the courts, and everything.
They should do that, but currently people don't do it, or they don't know about it, or they don't care, and then they get all in.
So it is for safety. So if anybody wants to shred their hard disk, come over here. Because we've got it. It's a really big machine.
Yeah. The person explained that if you have the right equipment, then you can read data from a hard disk which has been erased 7 times. So if you buy a hard disk and use it and sell it to someone else, he uses it and that goes on 7 times, it is technically possible, course with a lot of effort, to read the data of the first owner of the hard disk.
Yeah, but what I'm really curious about, how is that if my hard disk just crashes, that nobody can find the data on it?
They can.
They can?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, and there are specialized companies which offer services to read your data from a crashed hard disk. But it starts with around 100 euros per hard disk, so... take some serious money to get it off.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm just finding out that Chloe is going to be in, I think. That true, Andreas?
No.
No? Then it's time for some more music before Mr. Kowinski comes in the show. You've got some music, Andreas.
Yeah, I've got some.
Wow, that would be cool. Because Chloe has got my computer, so I don't have any music myself at this time. So we're just listening to the music from...
So where are we standing now? We're near the event phone, and these are the people that get the phones to everybody. You have a deck phone?
Deck phone.
Tell us what the deck phone does.
So a deck phone looks like a wireless telephone that would be in your apartment, not a cell phone, but a wireless phone. And they have a system here where they can connect everyone through their, I guess, a base station. And you get a four-digit number that you get to choose yourself, and you can call someone else by using their four-digit number and get them. And the coverage all over camp has been really good. It's been a fantastic way to communicate, much better than cell phones.
Can't get to Area Z, I don't think.
I've never been to Area Z. The only thing I know about that is that there's a TV there that people use for target practice for TV begons.
Nice.
I was picturing a TV shattered, but no. Only its spirit.
Yeah, I've been teaching people to solder all throughout camp and TV begons.
Have you slept at all?
A little.
He's been getting 10 hours a night.
Wow. That's impressive. He came here to get... he came here and he got sleep. That's,
Congratulations.
I've discovered...
Envious.
This year I've discovered a newfound appreciation for sleeping on the ground. I used to not like it at all. Actually, I think I still hate it. But I'm so tired at 5 that I actually don't really worry about the fact that I'm on the floor.
I've been waking up with aches and pains. I think it's mostly because of getting tackled by drunk people in the middle of the night.
One drunk person.
Well, one drunk person in particular. But
was that on purpose, or were they lost?
Oh, no, they weren't lost. I knew what they were doing. Walking around a lot. You walk around so much, and that's got to be good, too. But it makes you good and tired when the time comes.
Yeah, you go from village to village. Not that many villages this year. I just came from the Scandinavian village where I autographed the Norwegian embassy banner.
Massive amounts of cheering.
Maybe that's
almost
silent disco.
It's Jeopardy.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's going on now.
Yeah, so I witnessed the closing down of the Norwegian embassy, which is not one of the more popular ones. Unlike the Italian one,
where shut down?
We often go. Apparently the Norwegians are leaving quite early, so the embassy closes early.
Sad.
Yeah. So tonight we also have the Italians again. I mean, if you didn't have enough of the Italian embassy last night, again tonight there was a giant invite going around on I think Twitter. So we're all invited, including.
Did we make our way over there, or
yes.
Did you have some other plan first?
No, I've just been interviewing people about their health care and.
Tell us about
countries.
That. You've been actually going around talking. You were on WUSB actually a little while ago. Talking about what people in different countries have to say about this. And I guess it's a good place to find people from other countries.
It's pretty good. I mean, I would like to hear also from people outside of Europe. I mean, what we do really well here is European representation and North American representation. So I went around, I'm not asking Americans. I'm thinking mostly of the American audience because of all the sort of, I'll call them half-truths or the stories about, like, I think there's been one or two Canadians being dragged around the U.S. as part of, like, look at this lady. She had trouble in Canada with the health system.
Some bold-faced lies, too, I'd like to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even being specific about the case right now.
Death panels? We heard about the death panel?
The death panel. Well, that's a term that Luntz recommended. I think he recommended. I haven't gotten through the 25-page memo where he recommends how to talk about health to stop the Obama plan.
You talked about this memo yesterday. I'm fascinated by it. There's actually a memo on how to speak about health care in a critical way to get the audience on your side, even though you're not really telling the truth.
Yeah, it's, what's his name? First name, Frank? Luntz. He's the guy who brought you No Child Left Behind. And there was that one term that's not as popular, but George Bush used to say he was part of a culture of life. And these are terms that Luntz came up with and recommended. He makes his living this way, and he's not secretive about it. So they say they leaked his memo, but I think he just put it out and said, here's how we'll talk about health if you really want to win this thing. And he said things like, make sure you call it a government takeover of health. Use the term government takeover a lot. Make sure you talk about the waiting lists. Talk a lot about waiting and choice. Say that government will choose for you, and then there's this death committee or something, which they're saying that you know what's going to happen. The government will decide if you live or die. That's the argument they like to put up. So I've been going around to people from different countries, trying not to get the Germany over and over again, although we get a lot of those, trying to get a sort of cross-section of countries where people explain simple things. How did you get a family doctor in your neighborhood? How much do you pay when you go to him or her? Hospitals, do you go to the public one? Are you scared of the public one? Do you have a private health plan? So far, I mean, I get lazy because it's camp, so I relax. But I've spoken to Romania... not the whole country, but one person. Slovakia, I hit a big East Europe thing. Brazil, let's see, there was, oh, so Norway, Finland, Denmark, and yeah, Sweden. And I got an American guy who lives in Norway who works in a hospital. So he got extra time because he had a lot to say about it. And he had a kid, so he had a lot of extra stuff to say. I've got some plans for some Austrians, some Germans, and some French. And I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. Oh, and I got a guy from Scotland who showed me a lot of differences in between Scotland's medicine and the UK's medicine. So that's what I've been doing instead of relaxing.
Was there some kind of a consensus or anything that ties everybody together?
Well, you'll sometimes hear, and I suppose a lot of Americans realize it's not true, but I can confirm that in Europe, North America, and Brazil, hell has not frozen over, and there is public health to some extent. Brazil is a different case, but it does have a public plan. And so the first conclusion I would like to point out is that in Europe, people are living okay across the board, and they have a public health system, and it's used. And it's important to say that, because it's been presented to us like life as we know it will turn completely upside down. Life is not upside down. That's one. Then
you can say this while standing under a disco ball in the middle of the forest, that life is not turned upside down.
Yeah, and we're in the Netherlands, which has a mixed healthcare system, which is scary.
This is what Americans are afraid of, is that we'll, you know, turn into Europeans, and all kinds of fun will be had at inopportune moments.
So any other conclusions? Well, it's not always cut and dry. I mean, I wasn't doing this to try and say public health is great. A lot of people said public health is not necessarily the greatest thing. The Romanian guy said, we have public healthcare system, it's not great, but we're not going to use the private system, nobody can afford it. So he was a different case. He said it's not all roses. So it was a mixed bag for the most part. But very few people said that their country was looking to get rid of their public system. Actually, no one said that. So that's also important.
You live in the Netherlands, yeah. And you come from the United States, and you also have Portuguese roots. So for you, healthcare is a simple thing?
A simple thing, I figured it out. I had to figure out the Dutch system, and I got here at a time where they were shifting from a public, am I using the right terms? Yeah, public system to a mixed or what's called a semi-private system. So I figured it out, how to walk down my street, go to the health center, present them with this insurance that I chose. It's not that hard. I wonder about how it's going to be in the future. I do wonder because it's very private, more so than it used to be, and I wonder what that means one day. Are these, because the companies, a friend of mine here at camp was just telling me that Dutch private healthcare companies have much more power than they used to in government sort of lobbying, and that's a new idea that didn't used to happen. So we have quite a few years before I think things get bad, but this is a big risk that they're taking, and it's weird because the old system wasn't hurting people, but maybe it costs more than they wanted. Am I scaring everyone away with this healthcare?
No, I don't think so. But I guess it's kind of like not really what we're talking about at camp mostly, but it is interesting to talk to all these different people.
One last thing that's interesting is every time I bring it up to Germans or whoever, I introduce the fact that in the U.S. they're thinking of having a public option, and everyone says to me, really? I didn't know that. And it's interesting because usually whatever happens in the U.S., Europeans pretty much know about it, and in this case, this is a sort of fuzzy topic for them. Everyone keeps telling me, like, oh, I didn't know they were thinking of that.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. They don't believe that it'll happen.
So much of what goes on in the U.S. affects the whole world, but whether the U.S. has public health or not really doesn't affect things in Europe.
That's true. And it's one thing that actually Europe has always gone off on their own about, like, you know, even though, you know, private health exists, but they're not going to change their health system based on what we do.
Right.
As far as I know.
The opposite.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if countries over here weren't presented as something you don't want to be. Because, I mean, everyone seems very satisfied with the UK health system, so why wouldn't we want to be like the UK in that sense?
It's Friday night. It's 6 o'clock. Live from Shunky Towers, it's the Ted Danson Memorial Bus Shelter. We're here, live, on HARFM on 106.8 and fm.har2009.org. This is three random English guys straight from Shonky Towers. So, chaps, introduce yourselves, tell us who you are.
What it is. My name is Bill, and I do something to do with satellite.
I'm Scott. What it is?
What it is, Scott?
I do computer stuff as well.
Right, and my name's Stuart, and I work for Canonical. Right, so things we're going to talk about today on today's show, assuming we have enough time to actually manage them all. Right, we can talk about number stations, which Bill knows about.
Very briefly talk about number stations.
We can very briefly talk about number stations. We can very briefly talk about film. We can very briefly talk about RepRap. We can very briefly talk about the HTC Hero. We can very briefly can talk about having the operating system in ROM. This is all stuff that we've picked up, learned about, discovered during the time we've been at HAR. But the first thing is we have a competition for people who are, A, listening to this, and, B, at HAR. I have an iron key to give away. So the question we have to answer is... I have the shonkiest tent in the entire campsite by some considerable distance. So what you want to do is if you want to win the iron key, you have to enter by tweeting how much my tent cost on Twitter to SIL. So at SIL, how much do you think the tent cost? And if you get it right, you win an iron key. If you get closest, you win an iron key. So go for it.
Good luck.
So we're going to talk about number stations. Bill, do you want to give us a bit of an introduction about what a number station is and what it's for?
Well, a number station, very basically, is a radio station that transmits on shortwave, and they generally transmit just a series of numbers with perhaps sometimes some introduction music. We assume that they are transmitted by governments or secret organizations, and that they are generally aimed at spies in foreign countries.
But hang on, bear with me. So this is just a radio station that anyone can tune into. It's not encrypted.
You just need a shortwave radio and just scan around somewhere between 14 and 17 megahertz, and you'll probably pick one up.
Right, hang on. Have we got a clip of what one sounds like?
Yes, we have. We've got one, the famous one called the Lincolnshire Poacher, and we've edited it slightly for time, so it doesn't sound exactly like this, but it'll give you an idea. So we cut it short. That would go on for maybe 10, 15 minutes, just the numbers repeating over and over again, normally in groups of five. And it is assumed that they would be based on some sort of one-time pad. So those numbers would convert into either words or paragraphs from maybe a book or just a code pad, and then pass messages to spies.
So... I mean, no one actually knows. Has anyone ever said, yes, we're doing this, or admitted to running a numbers station? Or
no, to my knowledge, no one has ever owned up to it. Some guys used some radio direction finding and traced the Lincolnshire Poacher we just heard. They traced that back to an RAF base in Cyprus, so it's definitely being transmitted by the British. So we assume that it's being aimed at British agents out in the field.
I mean, you'd like to think, oh, I wonder what this could be about, but it's obviously to spy. Right.
Oh, well, what else would it be? There was an interview with a guy from the British government, and he said that lots of people like to transmit codes. Fishing fleets was his example. If I was a fisherman, that would not be a convenient way for me to communicate.
You'd think that you'd just transmit, you know, don't go near here. This is what the shipping forecast is for on Radio 4.
Well,
right,
exactly.
At night, right?
So it's got to be that.
So let me get this right. Is this something that used to happen in the 60s, or... Are we still being transmitted now? Can I tune into a number station right now if I want to?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could.
How many of them are there?
Well, I don't know, but maybe 50 or 60 distinct ones. Sometimes you get ones that just pop up in the middle of nowhere and transmit the codes and then go again and disappear. Other ones transmit at the same time on the same day, maybe every day, and still do now.
Just so, this is not particularly a number station question, it's just a radio question, because I don't know about this stuff. Scott's a ham guy. Shortwave radio, if it's being transmitted from Cyprus, does that mean that it's being transmitted with the intention of someone listening to it in Greece or something, or can you pick up shortwave radio transmitted from Cyprus in America if you want to?
Well, it depends on the output power.
from the transmitting station, as well as of various other sort of atmospherics and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, it would cover most of Europe, certainly.
Right. So does shortwave go further than? I mean, you know, the radio station that broadcasts near my house.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can't pick it up when I'm in the car and 10 miles away from my house. So shortwave is better than that, is it?
Well, it can be. In certain circumstances, it will go further than, you know, other frequencies. But it more depends on the output power, I think, of the transmitter.
And the other thing about shortwave radio, of course, is that you can just go to Radio Shack and buy a shortwave radio. You don't. If you get caught with a shortwave radio and you're a spy, then you could, you know, claim that it was just a normal radio and that
So you
weren't doing anything naughty.
You don't need magic spy radio to pick it
exactly.
up.
Exactly. So, you know, you just go into a country as a tourist, you take a copy of a book with you, perhaps, which could be your one-time pad, buy a radio when you get there.
A book code, yeah. Or whatever. How are you doing the decryption?
And there are rumours that the Americans have one-time pads that are printed on sticks of chewing gum, so they can literally eat the codes after they've used them.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's old. I did see Bruce Schneier when he wrote Cryptonomicon. When Neil Stevenson wrote Cryptonomicon, Bruce Schneier, the crypto guy, did an appendix about Solitaire, a crypto system he developed where it was keyed on a pack of cards. And it took a whole night to encrypt a message. But one of the things he was talking about there was things like when you're decoding the message, write it on cigarette papers.
Okay.
Because then once it's done, if you set light to a cigarette paper in midair and then let it go, it'll burn to basically completely nothing. Or you can eat the bits of paper. If someone, you know, if the Gestapo kicked the door down
right.
or something. One other thing, what are people doing about... imagine that I'm the British government and I'm transmitting to a secret agent in Iran or something.
Yeah.
Do the Iranians just have to suck it up?
Well, no, they don't. They could quite easily jam the signal. And jamming isn't anything special. It's just about transmitting a louder, more powerful signal at the same frequency. And we've got an example of the jamming one here, but it's quite painful on the ears, so you might want to turn your radio down a little bit. There you go. So you can see that if you were closer to the jamming signal...
Hang on. I thought jamming was some kind of magic, spectacular technology that turned off the thing. You mean you just... It's just like the equivalent of going, la, 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 I can't hear you, really, really loud.
Exactly.
On the radio.
That's pathetic. I thought it was much cooler than that.
No, that's it. That's as complicated as it gets.
So you just broadcast a really loud noise, and that... Now... you know, I mean, I was trying not to listen to that too hard because it was quite loud, but you could quite clearly hear the numbers underneath that noise.
Well, you know, the jammer would probably be more, they would perhaps have some direction on it. So if we're picking up the signal in England and the jammer is in Iran, then in Iran you wouldn't be able to hear over the top of it, but we can.
Right, okay. Wow, excellent. So is there anything else we need to... number stations?
Well, you should go and check out the CONET project. You can download all the various samples from archive.org. If you go to www.tinyurl.com/memorialbusshelter, you can find a list of links there.
Excellent. Right, okay.
So, what's next here? Where are we going to...
Rafa, we can go over to
Rafa.
The Italians.
All right.
I'm playing hooky from a discussion now about the Boundless League of... what is it? Anarchistic Hackers? The Republic of Blah is forming as we're speaking here.
Oh, my God.
Someone got was given some land. It's about 0.3 square miles in the middle of the Pacific. And we're going to have... passports. And
but this actually exists. This place actually exists in the Pacific.
Yes, or at least people believe it exists.
Is this connected to the transnational? You remember you have a passport from these guys, don't you?
Yeah, I do actually.
Or an identity card, anyway.
Yeah.
A transnational republic.
Transnational. I wonder where that card is. Yeah, I have that somewhere.
Yeah, someone made them at Chaos Camp 2007.
Right.
and you're reaching in your pocket to
Well,
find
I thought
it.
I might have it on me, but I don't think I do.
Yeah, I have...
you need identification in the Netherlands. It's required.
Yeah. I have the press pass and the garlic bills that I got at Camp 2007.
Remember that?
But
the garlic bills, yes.
Made with the actual paper that Italian lira used to be printed on. But yeah, the Republic of Blois, it will be recognized by the UN. And I don't know if anyone can be deported there.
It will be
there,
recognized by UN security, who will put instructions to keep it out of the building.
So, yeah, we're coming up with a constitution, but I had to go get some food when I ran into some people under a wavy disco ball full of a lot of little sort of seasickness dots all over the ground with microphones.
This is all more interesting than the Republic of Blois.
I don't know. My food instincts were taking over, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. Somehow my media whore instincts have precedence.
So where is the Republic of Blois meeting?
The Republic of Blois is in the middle of Pacific.
No, the meeting.
Oh, the meeting is in the hardware hacker tent.
Oh yeah. Right. Can I just ask? There's some kind of VGA display something in giant BSD. I heard it announced on Twitter, and I did not walk over to see. And I thought of you because you're in there.
Yeah, it's really cool. There's a lot of hardware hacking going on. The corner of the huge tent that I have is only one of the things going on there. There's this guy who has all sorts of small monitors and a teeny little microcontroller that each one presents one character that fills the small monitor screen, and he has a whole wall full of these monitors to spell out whatever you want, and you can, of course, go on the web and put the whatever method you want on it.
Oh, good. I could have sent you a message. Disco ball, 10, 11 o'clock, whatever time it is.
What time is it, anyway?
Grappa time.
Yeah, you really seem enthusiastic about that. What is this grappa of which you speak?
Basically, it's skin of the grapes and turned into wine.
Interesting.
Fermented.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really it's good for you, too.
I suppose.
That's what I was told.
Well, beer, I guess.
Well, it's true, because Voltaire, when he first got here, I'd look at him. He looked so sad. His eyes are all puffy and everything from allergies. But now, after all this grappa, you look fabulous.
Yes.
His eyes have, like, taken over two-thirds of his face, in fact, and he's really wide open and alert.
You might say that.
All right, well, let's get these people herded and moving in the direction of the Italian embassy, which will be madness, no doubt. You're going to continue this way, or you're going to the embassy?
I'm going to go towards where there might be food.
Okay, well, that would be the food area over there, probably.
Yeah, and there's plenty of really, really good food here.
Yeah.
That's true. We walked into town before, which is actually not a bad town, but honestly, I think it's better here.
Well, maybe I'll see you with some Italian grappinating people.
I think you will.
Okay, cool thing. Well, in the show, we've got Dave Kaminsky.
Dan Kaminsky.
Sorry, Dan.
It's fine.
Do know your name, but I'm just a bit... you're a big name over here.
We're both lagged. It's fine.
Yeah. No, but you're a big name over here, so I was a bit like, oh, am I going to remember? And then I say the wrong name.
It's fine.
Yeah. Well, yesterday we had a really inspiring conversation about... what is it about? About the... output or input people are giving?
We were talking about creativity.
Yeah.
And about how to actually, you know, kind of get people to tap their natural inspirations and natural resources and realize that it's okay. You know, there are really two different philosophies out there that the world runs on, and they're very different. And one of the philosophies is what matters is what your output is. Doesn't matter how you do it. Doesn't matter how you get it done. What matters is the output interesting? And the other philosophy says, you know, it doesn't matter how much it doesn't matter what you come up with. It doesn't matter, you know, how cool it is, how neat it is, how awesome it is. And what matters is how hard you worked making it happen. If it's really, really cool but was really, really easy to do, something is inherently wrong with it. It doesn't deserve its success.
No, that's what we talked about.
So you kind of have this inherent tension between the model of how hard you work and how interesting the output is. And that's kind of the tension between the two is from which all creative output seems to come from.
Yes. Which one stimulates creativity more, you think?
I think you ultimately need both. I think it's very tempting to say, you know what, hey, my output's really cool and interesting, but, you know, I don't have to work very hard on it, but that doesn't matter. All that needs to happen is it just needs to be cool at the end. And ultimately, there's a lot of really, really interesting creative work that is completely inaccessible unless you just sit down and do a whole bunch of really boring stuff. So it can be tempting to just say, you know, I'm just going to do the cool things and be done with it. But, you know, and this is something that certainly all of us in, you know, all of us who play interesting games have to deal with. Sometimes you just got to sit down, shut up, and work on hard things.
Yeah, absolutely true. I totally agree with you. But I do think that a lot of things what you see is that it doesn't matter what the output is, just the input. We talked about some situations at airports yesterday. Because what's happening over there? People are just getting work to be employed.
You know, airport security is a little bit of a mess. At the end of the day, it's just, guys, we're doing a lot of really silly things. There's a lot of security theater going on. And it's, I think everyone means well. Everyone's trying to do what they can to keep the skies safe because it is horribly impactful to the economy if people don't feel like they can fly places. Now, there's this great myth that telecommuting and teleconferencing works. It's a lie. If you want to get something done, you need to be able to actually look people in the eye. Something like 93% of communication is nonverbal. So if you actually want to talk to someone, get off your phone, get off your email. And let me tell you what email has never done. Email never leads to a decision because you can always send another email. You can always forward another email. An in-person meeting has a wonderful thing. It's called an ending. It may seem interminable, but no meeting can last as long as an email thread.
Just a question. Email can be useful for preparing a meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Email is great for creating a shared context. Email is great for creating understanding. Where email really falls down is in deadlines. Email is just really terrible for, you know what, we got to end this meeting in like 20 minutes. What's our action items? What's our output? Well, at the end of the day, when do we stop talking? When do we actually ship something? When do we actually finish and decide what we're going to do?
Yeah.
And
it happens a lot of times with text messaging as well.
People
keep on continuing text messaging instead of just giving a phone call from, okay, what are we going to decide?
Yeah. And it just goes on. And it's so, it really is slow. I mean, you're talking about like one sentence every couple of minutes. It's like, Jesus, we can do better than this.
Yeah. I think you're very right. It is about creativity.
Well, look, I mean, ultimately, you know, creativity, the actual creation of anything is not about individual, you know, it's not a smooth progression. You have to have releases. You have to have punctuations where it's like, you know what, we have built something to a point that it can actually get out the door. And that requires decisions, it requires hard choices to be made, and it requires sitting down and doing some work. One of the funny things that I think all software developers have realized is it is as much work to package software for release as it is to write it in the first place. And I can't tell you how much code exists, not just in academia, but all over the place, that was written just good enough for the author, but never actually packaged up to the point that anyone else can do it. I think I'm extraordinarily guilty of that myself.
Yeah, but I think that goes for a lot of products or services. It depends on how you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. The quality of the product is one thing, but how you market it, that's another thing.
I wouldn't just say market it. I mean,
distribute and everything.
There's many requirements to any product that anyone else can use. It's for example, security is not enough. In fact, security is not even interesting in isolation. It's like, hey, I have a secure email client. Well, that's great. Does it actually send email? Is it actually compatible with whatever machine users are using? Is it actually fast? Is it actually usable? I mean, secure alone is actually not the metric of people actually using it. First, people want to be able to use it, and then, only then, can it be also, by the way, I'd actually like it to not broadcast, you know, email to the seven seas.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So the point I'm making there is that you can be out there and you can say, I want to write a secure email client, but it turns out to actually do that to a point that anyone wants to use it, you have to think about a lot of non-sexy, non-interesting things as well. You have to think about usability. You have to think about performance. You have to think about all of these other things, which aren't nearly as you know, high profile. But if you don't do them, well, what's the point?
Yeah, absolutely true. Hey, this is your point of view on creativity.
Yeah.
But you're also giving a lecture over here. What's the lecture about?
On the internet, no one knows who the hell you are. Authentication is really, really broken. We have some real problems actually identifying who people are. Our best technology for doing this right now are passwords. Passwords are an unmitigated disaster. People can't remember them. People can't keep typing them in. I mean, we're using what's called LeetSpeak as a security technology. People think that if you change an S into a dollar sign, suddenly this makes things much more secure. It's a disaster. What was supposed to replace passwords, because we've known they've been broken for years. I mean, something like 61% of compromises right now can be traced back not to vulnerable software, but to the system thinking it's talking to an administrator. There are no passwords or bad passwords or default passwords or stolen passwords or shared passwords. It's like it is the near supermajority problem. And the technology that was supposed to fix this was smart cards or various pieces of hardware that would remember your credentials and do a negotiation with whoever you were speaking to. These devices have uniformly failed. They were supposed to be part of what's called public key infrastructure, PKI. And the technology behind PKI was supposed to be X509, a fairly complicated standard that was supposed to tunnel or carry all of this context about who you were and who made that assertion of that you were that person. It has not worked. It's been something like over a decade that this technology has been promised to us as a solution to all of our problems. There have been hundreds of millions of dollars spent, and all we keep saying is, well, it's not working because the business guys aren't caring enough, or because if we just insist loud enough or hard enough. And ultimately, the reality is the underlying technology is crap. It is absolute crap. I've spent a little bit of time auditing the technology, and what I found is every single layer you look at, there are ambiguities. Every one of those ambiguities ends up exploitable, and ultimately, the underlying technology does not adapt well to the real-world organizational problems that we have. So the talk is basically, hey, I don't think this is working. I don't think this is going to work. Here's a bunch of really cool and interesting and flashy bugs in, you know, X509 itself, and hey, you know, be aware this is here. But ultimately, the bigger picture is, if we want to fix authentication, and ultimately, if we want to fix internet security, we have to start building on a better base.
Okay, so when can they see you or listen to you?
I think I'm up at 8 p.m. tonight.
8 p.m. tonight? Where?
I am in the Two Envelopes tent at 8 p.m.
Okay, so if you want to know more about this, please come to the Envelopes tent.
Yeah, let's go fix the internet. Or at least
yeah.
Try.
Thanks, Dave. Oh, no, Dan. No, sorry. Just kidding. See you around. Sorry to wake you up in the middle of the night.
Middle of the day.
Yeah, but middle of the day for me, middle of the night for you. That's the difference of living somewhere.
Thanks much.
Thank you very much, Dan. We're going to some music.
This place is sold out, but it doesn't seem crowded, and I guess that's probably why it's sold out, so that it won't get crowded.
Yeah, I mean, they have to, that's something that, more so with the Netherlands than the camp in Germany, you have to follow a lot more rules. And I think, besides the fact that it would get crazy to manage, I think even legally, we're not supposed to have beyond a certain amount of thousands of people here. As a matter of fact, we're not allowed to have any campfires. They actually had one at the family village, of all places to break the rules. Family village had campfires, which... it was pointed out to me, brought everyone together around it, which was very nice at night. But by the, what was yesterday, the second night, the organization said of the camp said, you can't do it because you can't do it anywhere else in the camp, so you can't have a fire here. And sure enough, last night, nobody gathered together because there was no fire.
Well, that's a lesson mankind continues to learn. But, you know, the weird thing is, I see fire pits, so obviously they have had fires here in the past, and to some official degree.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like they, you know, they put a little some extra rules for fire safety, and even There was some talk of something like a potato gun somewhere.
I saw the potato gun. In fact, we saw it break.
Yes.
Describe what we're seeing here. We're seeing a giant robot.
There is, yeah. It has two legs, which keyboards on it, and it's about... How high is that? That's quite high. It's, well, I'll go for 10 feet high there. Maybe I'm being modest. And it looks like a robot without arms. In a red dress, I would say. And the eyes are two monitors currently displaying the HAR logo, and it's got circuitry inside of it that we can see. It's glowing, lit up. So this is an art piece, I think, unless it has some kind of function. I'm not sure.
Well, it's kind of scary. It's got keyboards. Yeah, keyboards lying at the feet and in the midsection.
Yeah.
And it's really in the middle of all these tents. I see military tents. Jupiter is rising over the trees. Yeah. All these people everywhere, it's quite a sight.
Yeah, the Frubar tent is over there, and they have a big pineapple as their logo, which sounds delicious. I walked over there, I saw no pineapples actually to eat. And back there, further beyond where we can see, there's a large, you have to imagine, a large tent, but that's where the lockpickers are. And they had today, I don't know what happened, they had the European Lockpickers Championship. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah. I suppose to participate in the European Lockpickers Championship, you have to be a goer, a camper at the HAR. I guess that's a given.
I guess, yeah.
So we may have a winner, a new European champion today. I don't know.
Wow, amazing. All right, let's continue walking towards the embassy, which I'm not sure how far it is. We just follow the sound of the noise and all the lights. And what's this? Kits for sale.
This is blinking lights.
Blinking lights. There's blinking lights everywhere, though. How do you distinguish these blinking lights?
This is where they actually sell you some and tell you their story, I think.
Oh, and they're playing bits of Avenue Q now.
I was trying to have a phone conversation with my mother, and all of a sudden this or something like this just started blasting, and she got concerned. Said,
so of course, being the great hit, the internet is for porn. And it's amazing because this is from New York, Avenue Q, so something that most everyone sees at some point.
As we arrive at the Italian embassy to the left and the Belgians to the right.
Italians and Belgians together.
Good night. Good night, everyone. This is Psychic with the Twilight Zone in a very special edition because I'm not going to do the entire show myself. Well, actually, we have Yubikoi on the radio, which is going to play some drum and bass together with me and Stitch. So please enjoy the wicked drum and bass that you're about to hear.
You've been listening to a retrospective on Hacking at Random 2009, a hacker conference that took place in a campground in August of 2009 in the Netherlands. The conclusion to HAR 2009 can be heard on next week's program. Until then, have a good night.
You rock. Rock.